You're listening to DraftKings Network.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome to the Big Suey, presented by DraftKings.
Why are you listening to this show?
The podcast that seems very similar to the other Dan Le Batard podcast.
I'm sorry, I'm not going to apologize for that.
In fact, the only difference seems to be this imaging.
I have been tempted in restaurants just walking past tables to grab somebody's fries that if they're just there. That hasn't happened to you guys?
I've done it.
And now, here's the marching man to nowhere, Fat Face, and the habitual liar.
The Meadowlarkers are back together. We got Amin El-Hassan, Howard Bryant, and Tom Haberstroh. I'm Kate Fagan, and this week's topic is the NBA Top 75 list. I think there are two ways to talk about this list. One is the micro of the list itself and the players and the snubs. And then there's also the macro conversation about lists, because so many of us have either, you know, voted for NBA teams or Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, or we just are in the media world and we understand what it is that goes into lists. So I wanted to start here with a quote from NBA great Alex English. When he first heard about this NBA Top 75 list, here is what he said. I can't say I am not disappointed for not being included on the 75th anniversary team after seeing the list. He wrote this on Twitter. I felt the same after the first list of 50. I have always known that my understated style wasn't conducive to being associated with such a flamboyant sport. All right, so I want to talk about that part where he's saying he felt this way after the top 50 list came out 25 years ago. Now here we are with the top 75 all-time greats in the NBA. And yes, of course, Alex English didn't make the top 50, also didn't make the top 75. And I think just for a little insight into lists, because I think it runs in parallel genres, whether it's sports or books or movies. The thing that I always think about lists is that lists beget lists beget lists. Like if you look at the book world, if you don't get reviewed by the New York Times, you are not going to be on their list of the best books of the year, which means that other lists that are made that are based on the best books, which New York Times wrote, you're not going to be on those lists either. And I think as someone who has created lists before, what you usually do is you Google best movies of 2018, you see what other lists have been made, and then you make a list based on that list. And I think to Alex English's point here, how many people who are voting on lists or creating lists are going to go do individual homework on each player, take a risk, and include Alex English if he hasn't been included on previous lists? So I think starting with this macro conversation, letting our listeners in on the way the sausage is made when it comes to lists, I think is a really important place to start. So, Howard, as somebody who's voted for a Major League Baseball Hall of Fame, and I'm sure a lot of other things, what insights do you have into how these things are made?
Well, I think the first thing is I would actually go in a slightly different direction before we dig into how the sausage is made, into just the psychology of lists themselves. Everyone loves lists, right? And especially in a digital age where the list becomes clickbait, where everything is hyper-competitive, and, you know, how do we... To your point, Kate, about how we even find things out. I want to go find a restaurant. I want to go find a book to read. I want to go find a book as a gift. I want to go, you know, I'm trying to buy a car, right? So I'm going to Consumer Reports. All of these things really, really sort of matter. And they, who are the top 25 sports writers in the country? What do you mean I'm not on? You know, it's like we all pay attention to this stuff. We are all very much hyper aware of the list itself. Do we then take a step back and say, well, okay, who made the list? What's the criteria? And then you start digging into that sausage, right? Now, here's how we're actually going to put all of this through the grinder and make a product. That's where you get to find some peace because then you start to realize, and I don't know how many guys on, or how many of us on this panel actually vote for things, but I can tell you one of the things that's even harder about the list is you don't even know who else is on this committee, right? That's the first thing. Two, how many of these people that you're going to add, do you actually have some personal connection to? I never saw Bob Cousy play. He retired 5 years before I was born. I never saw George Mikan play. How many of these guys did you actually see play? Right. So there's that. And then, like, as a Hall of Fame voter for baseball, one of the things that I always crack up about is how when people say, well, we got to take your votes away. And, you know, when you don't vote for who should be voted for, man, we got to let the pros do it. Let the Veterans Committee do it. And I'm like, those guys are cattier than we are. Because those guys played against each other and they're settling scores with this list. I never liked that dude because in game four, the 72 playoffs. So everyone's got a different criteria for what is going to be important to them. And so on the one side, you can just sort of take a step back and you can say, oh, well, you know, it's just a list created by somebody. It doesn't matter. On the other hand, if you put 30 years into the game, and if you had a 20-year career, a 15-year NBA career, and you were an all-star, and these guys all judge themselves against each other, these things are not trivial. They actually really, really matter. And they matter personally because everyone is judging their careers against the others.
I think one of the things, this is not just any list. This is a very high-stakes list. Everyone here is a Hall of Famer. So it's a little different from when ESPN does its NBA rank thing at the beginning of the season. Like, what? You've got so-and-so above Carmelo Anthony. What are you talking about? But, like, at the end of the day, it's a mishmash of just what a panel of people thought were the best players going into a certain season. This is different. We're identifying.
This is posterity.
This is super posterity, right? This is not, this isn't a listicle. This is, Howard, you're right. Lists, empirically, are excellent clickbait. You know, there's a reason why so many internet articles by reputable publications are in list form, because it draws attention, it draws the eyes. But this isn't that. They didn't do this for that. This is literally the league saying these are the greats of the greats, the inner sanctum of whatever the Hall of Fame is. You know, I think it was Bill Simmons who wrote in his book about how it should be like a pyramid, and like the higher you are in the pyramid, that's the greater you are of a Hall of Famer. That's what this list represents. And so part of the difficulty is when you're cutting names or including names, you're basically making a judgment call, not on a player or a very good player, on a Hall of Famer.
No, and a standard bearer. Who is the standard of this league since 1946?
It's important to note, the NBA does not control the Hall of Fame. It's the Naismith Basketball Hall of Fame in Springfield, Massachusetts. And so that creates another layer of prestige here, is that the NBA is deciding this. This is not a committee of faceless people.
Well,
and it's not about college, and it's not about Olympics. It's about your NBA career. And so I think that adds another element of prestige, is that this is the NBA's award. It's not some nebulous thing about fame.
The other complicating factor here is the thing that we all, anyone who is a rational observer of the sport, we all acknowledge it's impossible to compare people from one era against people from others. People who say, oh my God, if Jordan played and now he'd average 45 a game. Like, you can't say that, much in the same way that you can't say Larry Bird would get his lunch eaten or LeBron would be too overwhelmed by the physicality in the 80s and the 90s. All that stuff is just bunk. And I think most rational people accept that. But again, when you're doing a list like this, in essence, when you're saying Dirk, you're in, Alex English, you're out, you're making that value judgment.
The other thing about it is, let's not forget, these guys are all professionals. It's not just us hanging out at the bar. You know, this is their life's work. You know what I mean? It's essentially, in a lot of ways, the equivalent of whose pieces are in the Louvre and whose aren't. Who gets noticed as a standard and who doesn't? And that is not trivial at all. Mm-hmm. That is the ultimate of your industry telling you who it values and who it values above others.
Yeah. And I think that, to stick on this macro of lists, Amin, to your point about how empirically lists are interesting to us, if you're using the rate of clicking and the amount of downloads that anybody who puts out a list gets, people love lists. And I think mm-hmm. that when I try to deconstruct in my own mind why I love lists and why I hate lists, because I think it's a two-sided coin here. I think the reason that lists work are because there is no tissue between the numbers, right? Therefore, you can bring your own interpretation to why the list is created the way it is, what the context is. So it allows all of us right now here to say top 75 players all time. The NBA hasn't given us any context besides that. They haven't said the most impactful, the most game-changing. They haven't given us any of the tissue between the transitions between number 1 to 2 all the way down to 75. They haven't done any work for you. Therefore, 76. When you're with... 76, sorry, there was a tie. Therefore, when we're in a conversation like this, you can bring your own connective tissue to a list or whatever the list is, right? Like top 10 restaurants in Santa Fe, New Mexico. You're like, okay, well, Chili's. You bring, of course Chili's is on it right after Outback. And that's the way the list goes.
And that's how it's supposed to be.
But I think as writers, I always acknowledge this about lists. Lists are inherently lazy, in my opinion, because I don't know if you guys remember this. J.R. Moringer did a profile for ESPN like 3 or 4 years ago. It was called The 23 Reasons Why a Profile of Pete Carroll Does Not Appear in This Space. And it was his profile of Pete Carroll done in 23 bullet points. I remember thinking this is great for J.R. Moringer because he has to do none of the work to explain to us how these points connect and add up to a larger whole. Yes. He just gets to plop down 23 paragraphs. Fun fact, that is my dream. That's a dream as a writer. You don't have to transition from one idea to the next. And I think
page two beckons you. It beckons you. It calls.
Exactly. Right?
I think big careers doing this.
This is what lists do, is they are lazy. One, because I don't know. We know the list of voters. I don't know. What's my guess about we do the amount of legwork that each of those voters put in?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. Like, okay. What do you
think? That was
like,
the other
23 minutes? What was the average amount of time put in?
So this was the thing that was really interesting to me, because Howard brought up the idea that people say if they don't like your vote, hey, we're going to take the vote away from you, give it to the real guys, whatever. My experience, albeit not about something as weighty as this, but I've been a voter for All-Stars, All-NBA, MVP, all that stuff, right? I've also, when I work for the team, been around the process of, hey, we need the coaches vote for All-Stars, and seen how much work that goes into that. And it should come as no surprise.
How much work?
Zero.
Exactly.
No work. Because it's one of those things where it's like, hey, you got to turn in those votes. I'll get to it. Hey, you got to turn in those votes. And then finally get that email from the league saying, they need to be in by Tuesday at 6 p.m. And they're like, oh, Dirk, he's really good. And that's how you get these guys who are like 15-time All-Stars way past expiration date when they were actually All-Star caliber. Because in the grand scheme of a coach's priorities, picking who the actual All-Stars are is very low of priority on their list. So they're not going to devote a whole lot of time. Now, I want to believe voting for something like this, where it'll stand for at least the next 25 years, that you are one of a select panel of voters. And by the way, the voters were players, media members, and other
executives.
Including, just to point out, including W players as well.
Yes.
We're on the voting list. Yeah, Tom.
Right. Yes.
So let me just back up here for the audience to know what we're talking about here. From the NBA's media press release, the NBA 75th anniversary team was selected by a blue ribbon panel of current and former NBA players, coaches, general managers, and team and league executives, WNBA legends, and sports writers and broadcasters. Voters were asked to select the 75 greatest players in NBA history without regard to position. Panelists did not rank their selections. Current and former players were not allowed to vote for themselves. That is the prompt.
By the way, within that, it should be noted, they said without regard to position, the reason why was when they did the 50, a lot of people don't know this, the 50 was by position. It was 10 point guards, 10 shooting guards, 10 small forwards, 10 power forwards, 10 centers, meaning someone like Alex English or Dominique Wilkins could be left out, not because the voters didn't think they were one of the 50 best, but because we already got 10 small forwards.
Right. But, and also because back then you had a little position that wasn't a position, if we, for those of you who are too young to remember, was the term swingman. There were some guys that didn't have a position. They played guard and forward. And of course, today, you don't have positions. There are only two positions in the NBA right now anyway. The really, really tall guy and the really, really short guy. Everybody else, they all play the same position.
By the way, that's how we used to do practice, Howard. It was when we split up into groups, we just had bigs and littles.
Yep.
Bigs over here, littles over there, and that's it. But to go back to my point, you know, you have this collection of people, and I'm not here to cast aspersions on anybody, but I suspect on some of those names on that list, these are people who are going bing, bong, 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 boom, which is why you end up with the original 50 rubber stamped in there, even though
they probably started with the original 50. Okay, these are the 50, and now let me go see which 25, right?
Even though,
and let me Google top 25 players of the last top 25 years.
Yeah,
then you look at that list, you pick about 22 from there, and then you just randomly pick three more.
Kate said it best, lists beget lists.
Yes,
right? Let's just throw one other thing out here, too, right? Lists do beget lists, and why? Why is that? Because we all need guidance, right? So if we're trying to do something, we don't all just start. Like, I'm a huge jazz person, right? I listen to a lot of jazz. And for me, it's like Duke Ellington is always the most difficult guy. Why was Duke the most difficult guy? Because he had a 50-year prime. Where do you start?
Yeah.
Where do you begin with Duke Ellington, right? So, like, when you think about music, as we talked about Adele last week, right? When we talk about music, usually when you're talking about this stuff, it's like kayaking. It's like your put-in point. Where in the river did you put in your boat, right? Mm-hmm. At this stage is probably going to be your frame of reference. And so people need guidance, and within that guidance, they trust the experts, or they're supposed to trust the experts. You being selected to this prestigious blue ribbon panel is you being told you're an expert, right? Yeah. It's not just me over at BuzzFeed going, okay, man, here are the top 10 whatevers, right? On a list like this, to Amin's
BuzzFeed
point.
Catching a stray, yeah.
Yeah, right. I'm sorry, Buzz. Sorry, Buzz, right? I mean, so you are considered an expert. And yet, even as you're being considered an expert, more than likely in your day-to-day, you're still not taking this as seriously as an expert because you got other stuff to do.
Stuff that pays the bills.
The stuff that pays the bills. And also, the last point I wanted to make here was to say, when you're thinking about these things, so much of the prestige of a player is based on and rooted in so many things that are completely unscientific. Like, for example, a 15-time All-Star, that's a fan vote, right? So all of these other things that come into play. So you, on the one hand, you have to be able to take a step back and breathe and recognize that all of this in a lot of ways is bullshit, right? But then on the other hand, you also have a demand that this is going on my resume or it's not going on my resume. If you're Dwight Howard, is like, this is not going on my resume and it needs to go on my resume. When somebody hops on Wikipedia when I'm 60 years old, it's not going to say I was one of the greatest players of my time. And if Alex English works really, really hard in his game the next 25 years, maybe he'll be on the NBA All 100.
Before we get to Dwight Howard and the specifics of the list, while the top 75 in the NBA matters to some degree, of lists that we create in our world, it probably has the least actual monetary value attached to it. I don't know a ton of players, or Amin's making a face, so perhaps I'm wrong there. I'm thinking about lists when you're talking about like the lists that we make.
Incentives and stuff. Like if I get named to the All-Star team, I got $100,000 coming my way. These are the other considerations, right?
Right. Whereas like you look at if a restaurant makes a top list.
If a restaurant gets a James Beard Award winning chef.
Exactly. Like,
that's a huge value to that. Literal revenue driver.
That's right. A Michelin star. People are flying from out of town. They are forming their vacations around coming to your restaurant.
Right.
I don't know that this list has that kind of capital attached to it, but Amin, please jump in.
Memorabilia market. Being named to this matters significantly for all the little autograph signings of playing cards and game worn items and all that. it is incredibly important. Same thing with Hall of Fame.
I was going to say, it's like being a Hall of Famer. Like yeah. when you're, if you get named, all of a sudden your name is no longer your name anymore. It's NBA Hall of Famer, and then your name, right? That right. does carry a lot of cachet and but financial value.
To that point, most of these top 75 players are already Hall of Famers unless they're in their career. So it's like, if you're Dominique Wilkins, you're an NBA Hall of Famer. Are you really trading on top 75 as well?
He wasn't on the top 50.
He wasn't on the top 50.
Yeah. Yeah, so when the 50 came, really cool for him.
When the 50 came out, they had these two items. One was the leather jacket that all 50 of them got, and second was this large kind of mural. It had like kind of depictions of every player on there, and everyone signed it. And those things were like gold.
Chris Bosh's home. Bosh, like, in his office, I interviewed him right underneath that, and he pointed to it and said, I want to be on that one day. And he, of course, was not voted on the 75 team. So it does have capital within
it
these players.
It matters to them. Absolutely, Tom.
Beyond the vibe value to it, also there's a monetary value to being named to this list. It just raises the value of all your memorabilia. Now, is it going to be, in the long run, more than what a guy makes by making all NBA and getting that bump up to the 30% from the 25%, the 200 versus the 170 million? No, it's not like that. But it means something, and it does have a financial value to it.
Well, and each one of us has looked at a list in our profession, in our wheelhouse, and probably didn't see our name on the list in it. It created an emotion. I'm sure it did at some point, right?
And then you also have the behind the scenes of how the list was made, right? Like awful announcings, list of the top 20 most valuable up and rising talent at ESPN.
That's right. Utney Reed was 30 under 30. I'm like, damn, I'm 40.
Right. Or you know that like whoever had an agent at CAA got on that list.
That's right.
Like, okay.
I'll give you guys the best example of that. The Sports Business Journal 40 under 40.
Yeah.
They asked me to host it literally like 6 days before my 40th birthday. And my 40th or my 41st. All I remember saying as a host is, you know, I'm still eligible. If you guys want to sneak me into this class,
you know,
just squeeze me in.
No, and it's true. And that stuff, you recognize it. And on top of that, one of the things that's really important about these lists as well is that, especially in our profession, never mind theirs, but for some people like us, the people who do the hiring are looking at these things too.
Yes.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you put that on your resume. I mean, it's like, I never cared about awful announcing, but I do now. Right? I mean, so it's like all of a sudden these things that really don't have any meaning. And I do agree with Amin as well, that these aren't the same thing, that there are lists and then there are lists. Right. I believe in to Amin's point about if you are Alex English, if you are Dikembe Mutombo, if you're one of those guys, this list really sort of, it's not just a throwaway. Oh, yeah, I didn't make it. I didn't care. Yeah, you do. You
can't be cool about this one.
You cannot be cool about this list.
Yeah.
At the end of the day, this is a marketing vehicle for the NBA to strike up a conversation ahead of the 75th season. Remember, this is the 75th NBA season, and they did a great video anthology of the NBA that was fantastic in my opinion. And then they included this ahead of the season. And I thought it was really cool, you guys, about how I saw Klay Thompson really upset about this. Went on Instagram and said, genuinely pissed off about not being included in the 75. And then I got to see the players, Stephen Curry and Draymond and the Warriors, prank him, troll him by putting up in his locker 77 Klay Thompson, jersey of 77 written on it. And then he runs around the locker room, like puts it on, and he's having a great time. And I do feel for Klay because if you've ever talked to these NBA players who are currently playing in the NBA, and for those who have retired, they honestly think they are the best player in the league.
They think they're
the best player. And so for this wake-up call for Klay Thompson, who probably thought, I'm a shoo-in for 75. Yeah. I'm a NBA champion. Yeah. I scored a bazillion points in 12 minutes. I'm one of the best shooters of all time. Of course I'm going to be in it, right?
And I think from Klay's perspective, he's saying, because one of the things, I guess winning doesn't mean anything. The reality is, for a Klay Thompson, the opportunity has existed for him to say, all right, I've had enough here. I want to do the Kyrie thing. I want to be the man on my own team, right? But Klay understands that winning is ultimately the highest goal, and the best chance of winning is staying within this. I'm one of the people who believes if Klay Thompson played on his own team as the main player, at least basketball-wise, he'd be Reggie Miller, or maybe even better, because he's a better defensive player than Reggie was. Like, you could build a team around Klay like that that could be great and pushing up on contention. But again, you make a decision to say, no, but whatever I am on my own, I'm nowhere near as good as I am in this collective here. And we tell them, hey, don't worry about all that other stuff in the rankings, whatever. The winning will, you know, wipe it all out. And so you come to this ultimate rank and you say, I don't matter what I've done in terms of winning.
Oh, yeah.
As compared to how many guys who played with Russell who make that list.
That's, you know, right.
My buddy Zach Harper brings up this point all the time. Bob Cousy's playoff record pre-Bill Russell, 10-17.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces. Fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer. Howdy, folks. It's Mike Ryan. I'm living the gimmick right now. The playoffs have already gotten me, and we're a couple of days into it. It's like a playoff equinox that's going on right now. It's ridiculous. And if you're like me, you like rooting on your team. Trust me. I just bought 3 for my wife, daughter, and myself for game 1. I live it. Because I've been out there. I've been out in those streets. I've been panicking last second trying to find deals. And then when I eventually settle on something, I'm not sure if it's the lowest price out there. And I'm getting just totally blitzed with surprise fees. Well, thankfully, Game Time takes it out of the equation. All the fees are up front. There's no surprises. You get to see what your seat looks like. It's amazing, the technology we have these days. But Game Time has your back always. Take the guesswork out of buying tickets with Game Time. Download the Game Time app right now, create an account, and use code DAN for $20 off your first purchase. Terms apply. Again, create an account and redeem code DAN for $20 off. Download the Game Time app today. Last minute deals, lowest price, guaranteed.
Since we're already diving into the micro of this list, I want to play a little bit of Dwight Howard sound because I think he's probably at the top of our snub list of guys who didn't make this top 75 list. So let's listen to what Dwight said.
Everybody keep talking about this top 75. It was very disappointing. All the hard work and all that. But it's okay. Not going to stop me from going to the gym, working hard. Ain't gonna stop me from smiling and enjoying my life. I appreciate all the love and support of everybody who's saying I should be on it.
That I was snubbed out. My name!
It's okay. We ain't gotta worry about all that, y'all. Man, you know why? The Most High is amazing. I got another day of life. I got another day to do what I love. And I'm not gonna let nothing, not no list, not no opinion of nobody else, change that. I know who I am, and I know what I meant to this game.
I like starting the micro conversation with Dwight because I think he launches us into this conversation about, is this list and are sports always fully a meritocracy, or are they also more of an art form? There are times when it's an art form about where you landed in the generations, where you landed in the flow of the NBA's existence, where you landed around people, how people thought of you, how you meshed on teams, how you behaved on the court. Like, a lot of people like to say, like, oh, ice skating can't be a sport because it's judged. Obviously, there's a difference there between basketball and ice skating, but basketball and sports with wins and losses and numbers are more of an art form in how we see them and talk about them than I think most people want to give credit to. So if we start with Dwight, Tom, as somebody who crunches the numbers for us, is he the number one snub, and where does he lie on this question of like art form versus merit?
I think the exclusion of Dwight Howard by the panel is frankly embarrassing. I think Dwight Howard is one of the top 50 players in the NBA based on their resume on court. If we are talking about greatness, if we're talking about excellence, this is not a popularity contest. This is not a Hall of Fame where you can put quotes around fame and insert whatever nebulous definition you want to put in there. When we talk about Dwight Howard, you talk about what we remember over the last 10 years or
recency,
what we remember after
him. Recency bias sort of killed him. Mm-hmm. Like, if we're thinking Dwight Howard mid-2000s against
now,
changing every team, and that's a lot of hair, Dwight Howard.
Yeah. That guy, right? Like, Dwight Howard, okay, let me just set the table for you. He is an 8-time All-NBA player. Only 28 players in NBA history have more appearances on the All-NBA list. And mind you, All-NBA, in my opinion, and I think this is pretty logical, means more because it's not a half of the year award like All-Star, mm-hmm. and it's not voted by fans. It's voted by a media contingency that has watched your full year's amount of work in that campaign rather than the first 2 months of the season, which is All-Star. Anyway, 8-time All-Star. 5 of those 8 were first-team All-NBA, and only 19 NBA players in NBA history have more appearances on the first-time All-NBA list. He has 3 Defensive Player of the Year awards, and only Dikembe Mutombo and Ben Wallace have more. So, okay, those two aren't All-NBA, All-75 players, but Dwight Howard also was a much better offensive player than those two other players. So if you want to throw in the fact that he went to the finals in 2010 and took LeBron James down in the Eastern Conference Finals, that to many people is the peak LeBron James, singularly best version of LeBron James, and Dwight Howard's magic took him down. He is also an NBA champion a couple years ago, which obviously not at his peak. He has an incredible resume. 4 times in a row he was in the top 5 MVP. And I think when you look at his resume on court, what you find is he's probably this generation's best defensive player in those 10 years. In his first 10 years in the league, it's hard to find someone better. But what we find with Dwight Howard is I think people got caught up in the silliness of him, that he didn't take the game seriously. And the old heads, the Charles Barkleys, the Shaqs of the world, took advantage of that and ran with it. So Dwight Howard, in the second half of his career, and we can get into this and unpack all of the reasons why Dwight Howard unraveled, principally, in my opinion, it's the back surgery that he had to take going into that Lakers season. He wasn't the same after forcing his way back to play for Kobe and that Lakers pressure cooker. But I think Dwight Howard's omission speaks more to the panel than it does about Dwight Howard. I think the panel, which skews older, and former NBA players just do not like Dwight Howard. They think he should have a post game. He should be Shaq. And yeah. I think that is more representative. The reason why he's not on the list.
Are those legitimate questions? Are those legitimate criticisms of him? Because at least you're talking about him as a player and not just saying, well, I just don't like that dude.
No, I would say, first of all, it's not just the players, because there are a lot of older writers on that list as well.
Yeah.
And there is and even at Dwight's peak, there was a prevailing opinion that because he smiles, because he's jocular, that somehow he's not quite as serious about winning like Kobe was and Michael was. And we go back to this myth that in order to be the ultimate competitor, I have to be mad about doing my job every day. I'm upset that I even have to be here to play you people.
And you have to be a horrible human being of a teammate,
yes.
Right?
Yes.
You have to, you cannot enjoy, you know, I say yes to all of these things. I'd also throw 3 things out worthy of your consideration, in my humble opinion. 1, I think Dwight Howard got caught between errors. I think because he's played so long, I think midway through his career, the game just stopped caring about big men. I mean, the game has just gotten away from everything that Dwight Howard sort of does or did, just sort of went I wouldn't say in a flash, but pretty damn fast. I think that's one piece of it, because I think if we're talking about what Dwight Howard did, if we're talking 1982 to 1990, it's not even a question, right? I mean, we're not even having this conversation, right? That's one thing. The second thing I was going to say is that when Dwight Howard went to the Lakers, I remember saying there's not a single player in NBA history who went to the Lakers the same way he did, and it didn't work. He, you know, when you're that guy, when you're Kareem and you go to the Lakers, when you're Shaq and you go to the Lakers, when you're Kobe and you force your way to the Lakers.
Karl Malone and Gary Payton.
End of the career. Last year, it was 2004. Come on, right? When he went there, he went there to be in the pantheon of Magic and Kareem, and it didn't work. And I think he's been penalized for that in a lot of ways, because he's supposed to, in some ways, be the heir to Kobe, even though they were playing side by side. He was supposed to be the next piece of that continuation, and it fell completely apart, which made people go, well, you ain't great. And I'm sure some of the Lakers guys are like, because you know how Magic is. You ain't great if you're not, you know, you're the Yankee that didn't win the World Series.
And he left, by the way.
And also, that was going to say, and the other thing was, he left. He wasn't traded. He wasn't released. He said, I'm out of here. And so there was some self-determination there that made people sort of go, well, I mean, if you can't handle this, then who are you? When actually, in a lot of ways, we now give players a lot more credit for self-determination, and yet he's been penalized for it.
This is a question more specifically for Amin and Tom, but Howard as well. And it jumps off of the Dwight conversation, in that as someone who has covered the NBA but has not been involved on the day-to-day for like as long as you have Amin and Tom, I get the sense looking at this top 75 list and when I was covering that, guys like Dwight or maybe Dikembe Mutombo, Ben Wallace, I don't know, Yao Ming's not on the list. Is there a bias about the fact that if you just won the genetic lottery of genetic lottery winners and you were a guy who was 7 foot tall and could jump or could not jump, but you were just a huge guy and you didn't have that Kareem Abdul-Jabbar thing where it was like, yo, I'm going to go off on you if I am so mentally and emotionally invested in this game. If you were a guy who people didn't have that narrative about, did you get penalized?
Yeah, but Dwight's
while
not
you
big.
Were playing? Well, Dwight Howard has like the physical specimen,
yes,
Superman man thing going
does,
on where people could say he wasn't cutthroat. He didn't have to develop his skills. So all of those things, like how are we going to leave, you know, XYZ off and put Dwight on when he just sort of won the genetic lottery? Like, doesn't that exist?
Wilt Chamberlain said it a long time ago. Nobody loves Goliath, right?
Mm-hmm.
We talk about who's the best player of all time. You'll hear people say Jordan. You'll hear people say LeBron. You'll hear people say Kobe. You'll hear people say Magic, Oscar. Kareem somehow is like the forgotten, because all of the
rightfully
because of what? Why this is interesting. Why
should yeah. You, oh yeah. I like this. Oh. Howard, go.
Boston, LA, here we go. Okay, here's the reason. The reason is because
he was mean to media people.
No. The reason is because in the mid 70s, Kareem lost his way until Magic got there. And then he got his vibe. He didn't go to the finals from 71 till Magic got there.
Right.
Right. And that was with a diluted league when a lot of the great players were in the ABA as well.
Yep.
He did not take over. I'm sorry. He went to the finals in 74. He didn't win.
Right.
Lost in 7 to the Celtics. So I think that there was a little bit of Kareem being revitalized. I remember when they won in 80 and, of course, 82, he was back. Right.
Right.
But then that team was loaded as well. I mean, so at some point when you looked at Kareem, the numbers just became so staggering. It was like, no one's going to get to 38. You know what I mean? He just started to put numbers up where it was like, you began to sort of forget about him because he was so over the top. I mean, Kareem is so good. If you talk to players who played against him, they're like, we had no chance against him. We had no chance against Kareem.
The story I always tell, one of my friends who played in that era said as a rookie, he had to guard Kareem. And so he's asking his teammates, said, what do I do? Like, do I like rough him up, push him off the block? And they said, no, don't do that. That'll just make him mad. Like,
right.
If you just give him like token pressure there. And if we're lucky, we'll get out of this. He'll have 30 and 20. If you try to fight him and get physical, then he's going to drop it. Then he's going to drop 50. And so, but going back to Kate's point, yes, I think this game has always favored wings above all, because the game is sold about the grace and the fluidity. Always, 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 always.
Always wings? Always big men and then wings.
In terms of the marketability, though.
Yeah,
right?
Modern game. Yeah.
It's Larry versus Magic. It's right. LeBron versus Kobe.
But that's all in that's 1980 to the present.
Right. But in terms of, we're talking about these lists, right? These lists that we're making now or 25 years ago. There is a value placed on looking at that 6'7" guy do all these amazing acrobatic things that a 7-foot guy, when he does stuff, just doesn't look as cool.
Until Durant, yeah. Until you see Durant. Kevin Durant. I was actually going to say, and I want to know what you guys think about this. I get the Dwight Howard snub, and I believe that Dwight Howard was snubbed, and I'll go with all that. But I don't think Dwight Howard is the biggest snub. I don't think that.
Who do you have?
I think it's the generation of big men that have just disappeared. The Artis Gilmores, the Bob Lanier. Nate Thurman. I mean, there's a lot of guys who were straight up legit in that era, and we've forgotten about them completely. They do not matter, right? And also, to your point about wings and to Tom's point about wings, the wing has become so dominant and has become the sport that people are like, what's Robert Parrish doing on the list? Like, hey, did you see Robert Parrish play? The Boston Celtics winning percentage was the highest when Robert Parrish was on the court, Bird, McHale included, right? Back then, the big man mattered. You weren't building a team around Parrish, but the way that the sport just simply, and that goes to the point where I was saying earlier about there became this spot where the history of the game just shifted toward the game that it is now, where Dwight Howard sort of got caught in the middle of that, personality aside, where I think that people really just don't remember what NBA basketball used to be. So, go hop on YouTube
kind of
and
like,
go look.
It's kind of like, you know, like in Hamilton with the line, like, who's going to tell your story? It seems like a lot of the guys you're mentioning, their story got lost because there was no next generation who echoed back to them and said, yeah, I modeled my game on so-and-so. Therefore, we're now
lists
two generations removed.
And for lots of reasons. I was going to say, Kate, the thing that you said earlier that I thought was really important was also the criteria for how do we choose who is great? Like, one of the arguments that I always have about baseball, like one of the reasons why, you know, the Baseball Hall of Fame voting is not that much fun anymore is because people try to turn it into science. There is a significance. When I was looking at that list, one of the things that people really did seem to pay attention to was who was responsible for the building blocks that makes the NBA what it is today anyway. So you're going to give the Mikens and the Elgin Baylors and the Cousies, they're going to get that dispensation.
This was the part that I really wanted to zero in on, and I didn't know whether it was a macro conversation or a micro conversation. 25 of the 75 players named debuted in either the 50s or the 60s. A third of them in what was the embryonic stages of this league. And so I was on the radio yesterday with Vincent Goodwill, the writer for Yahoo Sports, and I was bemoaning this. I said, "What, these 50 players just got rubber stamped?" And Vince said, "What if the league, part of this list is also telling the story of the league? And you can't start a story in 1981, right? Or 1979. You got it started from the beginning." So I said that was the biggest mistake that the league did. 25 years ago, they said, we're doing it by position. 10 point guards, 10 shooting guards, et cetera, et cetera. I thought this time they should have done it by decades. 10 players from 50s and before. 10 from the 60s, 10 from the 70s, 10 from the 80s, 10 from the 90s, 10 from the 2000s, 10 from the 2010s. And that leaves you
and five playing today.
Wild card. Five wild card spots. If there was 11th guy, if Dominique Wilkins was the 11th guy in the 80s, and you're like, to hell with that, he's better than any of these guys, throw it there. If they had done that, I think we would have gotten A, representative of the story of the league, and B, I think we would have been able to more grasp these snubs. Because ultimately, what we're doing is what I said at the beginning. You're trying to tell me, pick a name, like what Robert Parrish, to pick a name, accomplished in the 70s and 80s and a little bit in the 90s was greater than what Tracy McGrady accomplished in the 2000s? How do you compare across positions, across eras, across roles on different teams, a star player for the team versus the third star for a team? There's all these complications. You could remove one of them if you just made it like, hey, these are the guys that started in these decades. And now at least we're getting comparison across peers.
It's equitable, right?
The thing the NBA seems to have to grapple less with as well, unlike Major League Baseball, is that Major League Baseball always has that demarcation line of like Jackie Robinson. And therefore, anything we do before or after, we have to discuss. The NBA has a little more of a squishy timeline in terms of how we're going to look at players before and after. And like, I don't need, how do we think about this list in terms of like racial integration of the game?
You know, if that's going to be part of the criteria, then Mike and Cousy, Pettit, Ariz, and none of those guys are on the list because you did, the NBA did not really become a black game, like where everyone started playing, where the league wasn't doing its quota system, probably until the early 70s. I mean, you really, if you're really going, you're probably going into the ABA merger era when it was like, okay, we're not going to do this anymore, but we got to have four white guys on the team. Like for years, everybody knows this in the NBA, the three cities that were like, we have to have white players, Boston, Utah, Phoenix. Everybody knew it. And you look at those rosters, everybody knew it. So it's squishy, Kate, only because we know 1947 is the automatic asterisk. But if you know the NBA history, right, it's a totally different story.
They blurred that line. And by the way, that's why I always go back to, for me, and Bob Ryan got really mad when I said this, but I said, for me, we have to start looking at pre-ABA, NBA merger, NBA as just something like before the Super Bowl.
I was going to say, it's the same way that we look at AFL-NFL merger.
The NFL did a great job.
You're not wrong.
Look, it happened. That stuff happened. We're not saying it didn't happen. We're not saying it doesn't matter. But we're just saying, for all intents and purposes, Super Bowl is the start of our modern history.
Of our modern
history. The same thing for the NBA. One of the things I pointed out, you know, Wes Unseld is on this list as a Hall of Famer, great player, all those things. Wes Unseld, one of two players to win MVP in his rookie year, him and Wilt. You go and look at Wilt's rookie year, you're like, hell yeah, he's an MVP. There's no question. But when you do some digging into Unseld's MVP year, you go, here's what I mean, right? Wes Unseld, this was the MVP vote, the top five vote getters. Wes Unseld was one, Willis Reed was two, Billy Cunningham for Philadelphia, Bill Russell in Boston, and Elgin Baylor for the Lakers. Other than the Celtics, which, by the way, ended up winning the championship that year, every one of those teams won between 54 and 57 games that year. Wes Unseld was on the Bullets. They won 57 games, right? Elgin Baylor, who's fifth in vote getting, won 55 games with the Lakers, averaged 25, 10, and 5, right? You've got Billy Cunningham for the Sixers, who won 54 games, averaged 25, 13, and 4, right? Willis Reed averaged 21, 15, and 2. They won 55 games. Wes Unseld, as a rookie, 14 and 18 on a team that won two more games than the next closest team. That's bad enough, because think about what it would take today for a rookie to win MVP. You'd have to blow our minds. I'm not saying that wasn't a great stat line for any player. I'm just saying that's not a blow my mind away, considering these other vets are here on teams that are winning just as much. But then this is the best part. Meanwhile, in the ABA, Mel Daniels, Connie Hawkins, Rick Barry, I'm like, wait a second. All the best players were over there.
We're over there.
So that's the part that really, really mixes it up beyond, you know, the obvious what the race issues that Howard is alluding to, that there was an unspoken quota. The idea that Bill Russell was traded because, like, St. Louis is like, what are we going to do with a black player? Right? I mean, like, that stuff was real, right? And also skews how we should look at this. But also there's this whole thing where there's a league where the best players who are also flamboyant and flair and really more
and black and really black, because the ABA was treated as the black league, the playground league.
And it influenced more what basketball looks like today.
100%.
And for whatever reason, the NBA chooses to put ABA stuff kind of in a corner.
Well, because they had to. They were adversaries. Well,
now, but I'm just saying now, it's over. The war is over. Why do you consider still do that? The reality is this. There's a bright red line. It's called 1976.
That's right.
And if we start looking at it from that perspective, and by the way, Howard, cover your Bostonian ears. If you start looking from that perspective, the Celtics have won 4 championships. 3 with Bird, Parrish, and McHale.
Tell me.
And 1 with Garnett. And this whole idea that, like, the Lakers and the Celtics are these rival. No, they're not.
The Lakers are the marquee franchise of the modern NBA.
What we're talking about here is we should be referring to the earlier eras of the NBA with a little, not a grain of salt, but we shouldn't weight it as much as we are in this conversation, because there are a lot of mitigating factors that make your performance in half the league is the half of the best players are in the ABA. Then doesn't that also argue that we should have a heavier weight towards the more current era, where imagine if Arvydas Sabonis or Oscar Schmidt was playing in Europe and in South America, and they weren't currently the best players in the world, were not playing in the NBA. Now that doesn't exist. Luka Doncic is in the NBA. You can't say that the NBA is only taking a pool of 75% of the best players. So I think by virtue of the early ages of the NBA didn't have collectively the best players, or at least we shouldn't be giving them just as much weight as today's players from a equitable standpoint, right? You have to point to this list and say, like, a lot of the snubs are from today's era. You look at Klay Thompson,
but I'm not saying that at all, actually. I'm not saying that at all. What I'm saying is that these are the reasons why the list looks the way it looks.
Right.
I'm actually not going to say that the league needs to pay more attention to players today. I'm saying that to the question of, does this list have a responsibility to tell the story of the league? If you conclude that it does, then yes, of course, you're going to have those building blocks. You know, do we put guys on the list? Does Hal Greer belong on the list, even though he played in an era where they played doubleheaders in cities that weren't even your home city, right? I mean, all of this, like, people don't realize how far the NBA has come. And I think that these different pieces of the puzzle, I think they're valuable. And I also think that this is one of the reasons why I feel good about lists like this, because I don't want everything broken down into some sort of macro analytic scientific point, right? That's not my enjoyment of the league anyway, and my enjoyment of the players. I mean, when you're thinking, like, I think we were talking about this, Tom, did you bring this up yesterday in the meeting? Kevin McHale, you know, Kevin McHale as a player, you know, I mean, is Kevin McHale more significant as a figure of the Boston Celtics than as an individual great NBA player? Probably, or maybe absolutely. I mean, there's all kinds of different reasons.
That's also the NBA. Like, it's so hard to disentangle, you know, Klay Thompson's value compared to...
And you shouldn't.
It's hard. It takes a lot of more art than science in that discussion.
We're all standing on the shoulders of giants. And that's why I felt like if they had instructed people to think about it decade by decade, we get to do both. We get to recognize the contributions of the people that got us here, while also not by virtue of a rubber stamp or just an automatic buy, forcing out people from later generations who may have stronger arguments. Again, Wes Unseld.
Doesn't the NFL do this? Doesn't the NFL do like an all-decade
list?
Yes, they do. All-decade teams.
The points that we're making here as we're talking is the simple fact that, like, lists tell stories, except the story is told by the people reading the list often, right? You shape the story based on your interpretation of the league. Therefore, if the NBA drops the top 75 without any breakdown by decade, then you get to apply your own story to it, which creates more interest and more dynamic conversation, which I have to assume as a talking point that the league wants is a good place for them to be.
But I think the panel is also a bunch of an older panel that...
Which it should be.
Like Rod Thorne, I know from a historian standpoint, you want people who have seen as much as they can, but I just think it's going to be a self-fulfilling prophecy, is that the older generations are going to call their generation better than the previous ones, or place more weight because they've seen it. Whereas I think Giannis Antetokounmpo was on this panel.
Which he shouldn't be. Tom, you brought something up a while ago that we let get past, which I'm not going to let get past. And that is that this there's a marketing element to this too, which is why Giannis is on that list, right? Should Giannis actually be on that list right now? Should Dame Lillard be on that list right now? No, but you can't have a list that doesn't have a current player, right? I mean, the current players that would be on this list historically right now that you say, okay, as criteria goes, these guys have to be able to withstand this list in 25 years. I don't know if that's going to happen to Giannis. I don't know if that's going to happen to Dame.
Two-time MVP, he's going to be on that list.
Yeah. It's too early, though, still. If you win a two...
To be fair, because Giannis, at this point, 8-year career, has a championship as the main player, has a finals MVP, has two MVPs and a Defensive Player of the Year award. If his career ended right now, it's better than Bill Walton's career. Now,
Bill Walton doesn't count. You can't count Bill Walton.
But I'm just saying, Bill Walton got in there.
Everybody had a better career than Bill Walton.
That's my point. That's one of my points. But to compare and contrast with Damian Lillard, I think you got a strong... One of the things I felt, and I love Damian Lillard, and I think he's the world of him, and I think if we did this list in 10 years, he'd absolutely be on it. But if I stop right here, you can't tell me he's had a better career than Tracy McGrady. You cannot tell me that by any stretch of the imagination. And so that's one of the issues. 25 years ago, Howard, you remember this, the biggest controversy was 4-year player Shaquille O'Neal was on that list. People lost their mind. And the voters were kind of like, look,
he'll be there.
This is happening, and it's not going to stop. And ultimately, of course, they were right. But of all these younger players, and I won't count Giannis on that because I think 8 years and what he's accomplished is a strong enough resume. But some of these other guys, will they be there? Are we sure in 10 years that they'll be there if nothing goes wrong, quote unquote?
And then maybe Alex English can make the top 100
list. Top 100.
Okay, that's right.
I was saying Giannis was on the voting panel. Giannis was on the voting panel. Was
that
point?
Yeah, to me, that's crazy. That's crazy. Like that. Like, I'm sorry. The kid. I read the book. The kid didn't even know what the NBA was until like 2010 or something like that. Like, I'm sorry. He's not going to tell me like, oh, you know what? Alex English was pretty good, but I really would prefer the stylings of Dominique Wilkins. He's not doing that.
He played the top 50 and then Google. Who's the top 25? And then he added that to it.
And lists like this and stuff like this also forces you to say, maybe I shouldn't have spent most of my career in Denver, right? I mean, if I need to be seen, right, am I going to be spending my career here? Alex English was a bad man, though, by the way.
What I would say to each of us, our next project at Meadowlark is to get the ballots.
Get the ballots.
Release the ballots, NBA. We need to see Michael Jordan's ballot. We need to see Giannis Antetokounmpo's ballot. I want to see Yoko Miyagi's ballot, a writer I didn't even know existed. He's a Japanese writer in LA. I want to see his ballot, too.
Who are the two guys that tied? And can we have a revote?
What if Dwight Howard wasn't even in 77? What if he was 97, right? Like, this is another story. So we need to release the ballots. If all the voters for MVP and All-Star and all this,
somebody,
if we know
the
ballots for those,
75.
Release the ballots. I want to see it all.
Hey, everybody, it's Mike, and typically I record these Miller Lite spots in the studio, but I requested that I specifically record this one from my home office because I got a window, and I'm looking outside at those beautiful fishtail palms, knowing that in just a few seconds, I'm going to go out there, I'm going to crack open a can of Miller Lite, because while sitting outside by my fishtail palms is usually a good time, I like to take it up a notch and make it a Miller time. That's right, you crack that puppy open, and you don't have to think about what you're drinking for a darn second. A lot has changed over the years, including my backyard. Lots of landscaping being done right now. But the one thing that hasn't changed is the undebatable quality of Miller Lite. You don't have to choose what quality is the best. Miller Lite has great taste, and it's less filling. Tastes like Miller time. To get Miller Lite delivered right to your door, visit MillerLite.com/Dan, or you can find it pretty much anywhere that sells beer. Celebrate responsibly. Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96 calories per 12 ounces, fewer calories and carbs than premium regular beer.